The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
Yeah, great topic, thanks to me.
It wasn't even in the show rundown until about 3 minutes ago. I will get to it, but before I get to it, Dubs, I do need to introduce the show. BetMGM is the place for soccer in Canada, and it presents Footy Prime. It's a little mini Footy Prime today, as far as there's just two of us. It's the Dubs and Sham show.
Mm-hmm.
There's no JC. He's editing. Wonga is, I think, in either Montreal or Ottawa, or in between, doing the family thing. No Craig today, no Jimbo today either, but we'll find a way to soldier through, Dubs. I think there's enough to talk about.
I know. I think last time we were here, you thought that Canada had trounced Argentina when in fact they had lost 1-0. I'm sorry to remind you.
Was that the one?
The last time it was Sharms and Dubs. Oh, yeah.
That faux pas. Thanks for reminding the audience.
No problem. Right off the top.
My knowledge has limits. I do want to, though, the topic I wanted off the top was you had to run away 3 minutes ago because you left your coffee in your washroom.
Well, okay. So the washroom upstairs, so the new office is in the bedroom, and then we've got like the little bathroom that's off of it, but it goes into like the main part, which is just the sink and the counter, and I was drying my hair. So that's where the coffee was, and then there's another wee door that takes you into the loo. So I wasn't on the toilet drinking coffee, God forbid.
It's okay if you were. We've all done it.
I mean, there are worse things, but I wasn't doing that. I had my coffee next meal. I was drying my hair.
Well, it is a diuretic. So sometimes it makes sense, right? If you're having difficulty in that department, to bring the coffee with you. See what happens.
My goodness. Yes.
Right? It can be a good thing. Were you a pre-match coffee drinker? You see a lot of athletes walking into grounds, rinks, with a big old Tim Hortons with them. Was that you?
100%. Wherever we were, it was like the local brew, even if you had to muscle it down, or we were somewhere like Italy or a quaint European or Scandinavian town, then it was the espresso that was on site, and I would take that with me on the bus. I would always obviously have it in the morning. It would be part of my pregame, and I'd also have like another one that I was kind of downing on the bus, and then my peanut butter and banana sandwich that I would have a half on the bus, and then the other half perhaps at halftime if I needed it. That was the routine, but always the caffeine.
How long between kickoff and coffee or banana and peanut butter sandwich was there? Because there must be, I imagine, certain digestive schedule.
Hence the bus ride. So then, as you alluded to, that sometimes the coffee is the catalyst for things that need to move. Right, whether it's a bowel movement or otherwise, and so the bathroom around the locker room was sometimes a very explosive place and gross place. And you just hope that,
I used to play rugby at a place called Fletcher's Fields here in just north of Toronto, and I think there were six clubs based out of it. Okay, so it's this big, huge clubhouse, huge thing, and six fields all around it, and you can imagine a Saturday morning, right? There's six clubs playing out of this one venue. Each club has probably three teams, maybe four teams, plus juniors. You can only imagine the state of that washroom. That many rugby players, 90% of whom weren't great athletes, probably on the piss the night before. Some coming to the morning match already pissed. You can just imagine it's not a nice place to be. But there's something about that pre-match ritual, right? You're in it, so you get a bit nervous, right?
Yep.
And that's the reason for the explosivity.
Well, this is it. It manifests itself in very predictable ways. So I had teammates, like my friend, our good friend of the show, and the person who spearheaded the Northern Super League, of which the second season is kicking off tonight. I will be on the call. So it's a rematch of last year's final. That's 10 p.m. Eastern time on TSN, Vancouver versus AFC Toronto. But Diana B. Matheson herself, puker before every game. And she wasn't the only one.
What? Really? The puker?
Oh, yeah. Don't get the puker. Mm-hmm. But the diarrhea and like, yeah, but then it's almost like, and my husband, JP, same thing before a hockey game, not always, but pretty routinely. So like, it's almost, they're unsurprised by it. Like as a parent, one of the worst things is dealing with gastro or a bug that cripples the whole family, and young kids having to throw up and they're like, what is happening to me? There's an alien inside my body and it's a very foreign thing. But as an athlete, like dealing with the nerves, as you said, like sometimes you get the shits, sometimes you throw up. Like so that's usually how it manifests itself, which is why the bathroom is, there are lots of atrocities being committed. And like you just know to steel yourself as you walk in, and you might hear things that are, you know, you don't want to speak of afterwards, and no, hear things that you don't want to speak of afterwards, right? But it's not as commonplace. And
not
you
as
get
great
used
as a rousing pre-match speech. You don't want to be hearing that. Yet the cubicles generally in sporting facilities are just that, cubicles, right? There's not much privacy.
Nope. And you just have to get over it.
The puking, I never understood the puking. I'll do all I possibly can to avoid puking. I'd rather lie in bed, you know, rolling around in agony all night than actually puke. But to do it almost voluntarily, oh, not nice. By the way, I saw Diana yesterday.
You did.
I was at this footy first event in Toronto. Victor Montaliani was in town, and Andy Petrillo, One Soccer, and CSME were hosting this event. Great dinner. Great lunch. Sorry, luncheon. Mm. It wasn't a lunch.
Poncy.
A poncy luncheon, they called it. But it was really nice, actually, and great food. And it was great to hear from James Johnson, who was up there talking, Kevin Blue, and then Victor with Andy. You know, calling the shots, interviewing everyone as she always does so well. And it was just a really good event to see everyone in there. But I was sitting down there, front row of a table, and looked right across there, and there's Diana. Didn't get a chance to speak to her because it was really busy in there. And you can lose Diana so easily.
You can.
Don't try and find Diana in a crowded room. It's not going to happen.
No, but she does have great energy and great aura about her, right? Like she takes up space, even though she's a diminutive person, right? There's nothing diminutive about her personality. But as you said, in a sea of people, you're like, oh, there's Dee. Wait a minute. I think I saw Dee. And she disappears. But there's a little bit more to our friend Diana B these days, right?
There is.
Congrats to she and Anastasia. Yeah. They announced on socials a few weeks ago that they're expecting.
And you can tell.
But there's not a whole lot of room for that baby to grow.
There isn't. But it's a very cute baby, as they say.
Yeah.
Let's call it that. But you're right. She has got a presence about her. Mm-hmm. Dana, when she walks into a room, everyone knows who Dana is. And she is obviously now one of the most important figures in Canadian soccer. And Victor Montaliani alluded to that and you know, spoke of her very well. Just talking generally, though, about the World Cup and what it means for Canadian football, soccer. What is the legacy? What we're doing right here? He talked about the lack of, as we build this pyramid, and it's kind of one step at a time in Canada, we're doing it together as opposed to in the past, it was so fractured. And he even refers to the English football, you know, the home of football, so to speak, and how their pyramid is still so divided and so fractured. You have the Premier League, you have the FA, you have the League Championship. You know, everyone kind of hates each other. They operate because the market's so massive. Mm-hmm. Way bigger than it is here, obviously, but they say we are kind of building something here and we can criticize all we want. There's always reason to criticize, be it at a provincial level, at a national level, at the FIFA level, obviously. But if you try and remove the blinders here a little bit and look at the positivity, there is some positive stuff happening beyond the easy targets, the low-hanging fruit. Tickets, pricing, yada, yada, yada.
FanFest, which is now free, right? Which is good.
They pivoted after the backlash. It's going to be free. You can, at least in Toronto anyway, it won't cost you $10 or $300 or whatever it is. You can walk in. I think they're going to allow 20,000 fans a day. I mean, it kicks off in 2 months, right? I mean, they've known about this thing for how many years now? Since 2018? And then only now, oh, shit, we shouldn't charge for this.
Yeah. People might be upset. But I just don't understand how you can make an oversight kind of that and get it so egregiously wrong. You know, like part of without even knowing how inaccessible the World Cup would be in the way of ticket pricing and inviting a lot of people in, especially families, young kids who would have that experience. The Fan Fest allows people to be up close, not quite there, not being able to smell the pitch or like see the players and be really up close, but it allows them to feel a part of that exactly. buzz, of that energy. And so to further limit, you know, building that energy and that excitement in your city around games that might be pricing people out, to me, is just so obtuse. So thank goodness they rectified that, at least in Toronto, because I believe there are still some markets where they will be charging obscene prices to access these fan fests. Like transport to get to stadiums is still going to be exorbitant and inaccessible to many people. So there are still issues and problems, but at least in Toronto, where, you know, Canada's got 13 games, Toronto is going to be a big part of it. It's kind of the centerpiece. I mean, obviously Vancouver as well. It's going to be stunning. But again, how many true soccer fans are going to be able to access the actual game? So making sure that those people have a way in by way of FanFest is part of the energy, the build, the excitement ramping up towards the World Cup.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I guess we're fortunate here in Canada with Toronto and Vancouver in that the stadiums aren't too far out. So they can't find a way to you know, grind more dollars out of the fans by charging extortionate amounts for train fares and bus fares. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll try. But I mean, BMO Field, you could walk it if you want, if you're downtown. You really could. Mm-hmm. Certainly in Vancouver, you can as well. So, you know, it's I heard Gianni Infantino talking about this past week, and actually Victor was talking about it too, saying, listen, the World Cup is our big moneymaker. This is how we can pay for World Cups, men's, women's, U20s, U17s, all these events. It's financed by this World Cup. That's why it costs so much money. But my when I hear that, I want to just say, yeah, but you did it before. You had these tournaments without charging this amount for tickets. It is possible, clearly. So this is, you can really dig deeper into that, I think. But it's, like I said before, this is the controversy for this tournament, right? The price. That's the mm-hmm. big controversy outside of the whole bullshit Trump ice, which is obviously a big factor as well. It's the pricing, which is still better than, like I said, migrant deaths. People dying building stadiums, which was the big thing last time out. Human rights issues. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's human rights. We've got a right to watch a football game, but I can't afford to. Maybe in that regard, but it obviously goes a little bit deeper than that. So,
well, and like that, the geopolitical implications, as you alluded to as well, with, you know, travel bans and visas for fans who want to come, who are on that banned list of travel, and fans who are fearing for their lives around stadiums because ICE agents might be there. Like, those are very real human rights issues.
What do you think will happen though, Dubs, when push comes to shove, so to speak, not literally, although it might be, this World Cup, do you think that stuff will go away? Do you really think it's going to be a problem during the World Cup, or is PR such a big thing you do?
Yeah, because you just talked about Qatar and, you know, the migrant workers, the deaths and building that infrastructure, something that, you know, you're talking about, Victor, referring to the home of football in England and that pyramid being fractured. And I think optics of, you know, that dais, that stage, including Kevin Blue and James Johnson and Victor Montagliani, that's already, we're off to a good start, right? Because we have to be working in concert. We have to be working lockstep in this country to make the game feel bigger, in order to build on it. But there's a real lack of infrastructure and that FIFA legacy money to build something lasting in this country, to change the sport and to ensure that we can play games at home. We have more soccer specific stadiums. Like, we just don't have that right now. But your point about how in Qatar, you weren't allowed to wear the pride armbands, the human rights issues, the migrant worker deaths, that all kind of went away once the ball was kicked. I mean, it was still being talked about, but I think overall,
except for families,
obviously, but like the larger narrative,
I know exactly
came
what
about the game, right? And whereas I don't see that happening, I still think it's going to be a fabulous spectacle, and it's for the first time you have 48 teams, so there's going to be an incredible amount of brilliant football to talk about. But I still think that's going to be in the shadow of the legacy that this tournament is going to leave in the way of FIFA being greedy, mm-hmm. Trump overtaking it and like the political messaging being at the forefront of it all. I think it's going to really be 1A, 1B. There will be times where it will be highlights and it will be individual brilliance and it will be the Cinderella stories like the Moroccos or the Saudi Arabias, like the dark horses, like teams that you don't expect to do well that will inevitably or invariably do well because there's a possibility for that because so many best third place teams go through in a 48 team tournament. But that what will be looming large for me will be the geopolitical landscape and just the horrible, disgusting messaging coming from the political landscape in the US.
Yeah, because we know that a certain someone will use his platform to get his face and his voice out there constantly. Will this thing be overshadowed by greater, more important things in the world geopolitical space? Possibly. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice for that not to be the case and for this to be a little escape for us all. But I fear that won't be the case.
Yeah. Well, we saw it, Sharm. Sorry, just to move on, like Trump trying to smooth over how he, you know, botched relations with Italy in criticizing Pope Leo by saying, listen, we don't want Iran at the tournament. So Italy didn't make it, but let's have him back in.
Like Carlo Zampoli, the U.S. special envoy, talking to the Financial Times saying, yeah, just replace him. Not, you know, will Iran be kicked out, but just replace them.
Yep.
With Italy, because he's a fan.
Just
now,
drop him
I
in.
Give the Italian Federation so much credit here because they stamped this one out straight away.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we ain't doing that. We're too proud to be given a berth despite not qualifying. So I give them a lot of respect for that because that's just so vile. And so just the attitude, the arrogance. Ugh, I don't think it's much point putting, you know, much more time on that topic, no, to be honest with you. But it ain't happening. Now, whether Iran plays or not, I mean, I could understand why Iran wouldn't play in it. We'll see what happens the next few months, but they got to figure it out pretty soon. NTCs, of course, will be a thing. Last week, Trump saying every match is sold out. Guess what? It wasn't true.
No, and Infantino on the same refrain, right?
Yeah, it's not. Now, a lot of games are sold out, the big games. A lot of the smaller games have terrible ticket sales at the moment. Now, from what I understand, part of that is a lot of these sponsors, each nation is given a certain allocation of tickets. A lot of those are just being thrown back in. They're not taking the allocation. So they're being put back in the pot. And that's why you're seeing these tiers now being sold between now and the World Cup. So we'll see what happens. But I honestly don't think empty seats will be a story for this World Cup. Like I said before, you always see empty seats at World Cups and the smaller games. The big games will be sold out, whether they should be or not, whether they're real fans there or not, they'll be sold out. It'll look good on TV. Simple as that.
But like your marquee matches, your flagship ones beyond your giants in the game, you're looking at the hosts and you want the hosts to have a bump. And Forrest has talked about, you know, Canadian fans not traveling and not showing up in the past, aside from our hugely devoted and passionate Voyageurs group who are always there, but just in general, not really there. So you hope that the Canadian games, whether it's the opener versus Bosnia, June 12th in Toronto, or the subsequent games in Vancouver, or even the US and the Mexican teams south of the border and then south of the border again, that you have the home fans showing up and creating that atmosphere, right? That is part of the World Cup, right? That's a calling card where you've got the home fans and they're like, they're rabid and they're just desperate to support their team. But, you know, the trickle down effect from these high prices is that a match like the US versus Paraguay, is it?
Paraguay, yeah. I think,
yeah, in their opener in LA has not sold very many tickets at all. So there, I mean, there's a direct impact of the high prices, the dynamic pricing, the way that they're meeting everything out, you know, like we're going to release these tickets and create kind of that a supply demand issue and people are going to scramble for it. They're going to queue up and they're going to be willing to pay these exorbitant prices. And then you release a little bit here and there, but there's just not been the response, I think, that they were hoping for. So I agree with you that you look at past World Cups, there are empty seats sometimes, not empty stadiums, but it's not sold out necessarily, depending what matches we're talking about. I think there's going to be more empty seats than we think. I don't think that, you know, it's going to be sparsely populated or it's going to be an empty stadium, especially if you're talking about SoFi Stadium, which is like a state-of-the-art, stunning ground, right? Like that new build. But if the US show up on their opener and they don't get the support, like that this thing is going to get the bad press. And I think it would be deserving of bad press.
I wonder, though, if sales are lacking in the build-up to these games, whether you'll get some great deals for tickets to fill. And then how are you going to feel if you spent $1,000 on a ticket and then suddenly the guy beside you spent $50? Interesting.
Yep.
You mentioned Bosnia. Did you hear this? I've just seen this story. This is great. Stuttgart forward Ermadan Demirovic of Bosnia-Herzegovina has promised drinks for the whole city if Bosnia made the World Cup.
For the whole city?
Yeah, he's actually organizing the drinks and ice cream for kids as a thank you to the fans who supported them at club level. Taking part in the World Cup with the Bosnian national team means a vast amount to me in the summer. A huge dream will be fulfilled, he says. Ahead of the playoff games, I signaled there'd be drinks for the Stuttgart fans if I really would be there at the World Cup. Now I want to keep that promise. So he'll be handing out the beer personally for an hour next week at a spring festival in the city. He's also arranging for an ice cream truck for children at a Stuttgart training session and making a donation to the club's charitable foundation. I might need to get a Bosnia shirt now if they're giving out free beer.
Only for that reason. And all the kids are going to be looped.
It's a good story, right?
No, it's great. Yes. That's a type of thing that you need.
I love that.
That's a feel-good story.
Go on, where?
Oh, look at you. Wait, are you an influencer? Did you get a free shirt?
Well, it was free, but not as an influencer. Let's just say that we have, through this podcast, we have met some incredibly wonderful, generous people. Lovely people.
Yes.
And it was my birthday last week.
That's true.
I won't put this person on the spot, but let's just say I benefited.
You wouldn't want to call out a good deed?
Yeah. It was Carrie Ryan.
Carrie? So, well, we should tell our audio listeners what you're wearing exactly. It's the new Canadian men's kit, the Black Ice one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Painter's Radio kit. But it's great. Now, Carrie, she actually won this in a draw. And she thought of me, so she sent it to me for my birthday. So Carrie Ryan of the Footy Prime Supporters Club, thank you so much. This is amazing. And it fits. It's a large. And I tell you what, it fits pretty damn good.
It looks good. I can just see, you know, like you'd be like in a museum. Like I can just see your bust right now and it looks tremendous.
A bust? A museum?
Can't see it.
Would I be in donning this shirt?
Well, if there was like a bronze James Sharman, right? Like a traditional, you know, bust where it's just kind of like from a nipple up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you know what? You're right. Because anything below the nipple, you know what you want to say. So unless it all goes wrong.
What would you be in there for?
Love is fine.
Legendary pies and host. Here we go.
Yes. May you rest in peace.
Maybe not in that order.
May you rest in pies. Ooh, that's
not bad. Oh, that's good. I like it.
Good. Might have to put that in my bio.
Let me ask you about the neckline, though. Is it a little bit square?
It is. It's
across
squared
the front. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
More chiseled. Well, say more chiseled. Makes me look chiseled. And the shoulders have this kind of like a little seam here.
Yeah.
The red. It's really nice. And it kind of pops up a little bit. So yeah,
there was something unseemly about you when you logged on.
See the Dubs and Sham show. See, we're on fire.
I know. We're on to something here.
Yeah, it's great. Anything else like internationally you want to get to before we move on to some other topics?
I don't believe so.
No? Okay. I was going to look at some comments, actually. Didn't get around to it. Luka Gavron scores a goal.
Yeah.
Too bad Craig's not here because Craig is buzzing about this one. The TFC midweek to earn another draw, but still it's unbeaten in 7 games. It's so great to see a goalkeeper score a goal. And Luka Gavron is such a good guy. If you ever get a chance to meet him, he's such a nice guy. And he comes from Hamilton. And Tony, our boy Tony from Hamilton, sent me a tweet saying, "You're welcome." And just put like the bio of Luca that is from Hamilton. Tony, unless you're his dad, just because you're from the same city, doesn't give you credit for the player. Okay? Just want to say that. Okay, yes, you're both from Hamilton and you should be proud about that. But let's not do, "Oh, you're welcome. He's one of ours." Like, stop it.
You guys have a very interesting relationship.
If I did that, Tony would be all over me.
Yeah, you get hammered for it, 100%.
So, no, I'm not having that at all. But yeah, Hamilton pride. Luka Gavron scores a goal. Third, I think, ever goalkeeper goal in MLS history. First for TFC.
Yeah.
And did it? I watched it in replay numerous times. It kind of came off the shoulder, but it doesn't matter.
Nope.
It's still a great goal. He rose like a salmon. I don't know what Andre Blake was doing in goal.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It was a lovely goal, and what a moment for, you know, a team that TFC that's in these moments, right? It's certainly improving. They're getting some points now. It's a far cry from a couple of years ago now. And they need these moments. So that was important. I enjoyed that.
I did too. And it made me think of Alisson for Liverpool. I mean, our listeners are going to be thrilled that in the Sharms at Dub show, we happen to be talking about Liverpool. But like there's moments like that, like a goalie goal, a keeper, as you said, rising like a salmon, like coming up desperation. And they're the ones, like not just flooding the box and causing issues for the opponent, but they're the ones who actually get a touch to it. They're the ones that more often than not, it's a header. And I think in his interview with Apple TV, he was taken to task a little bit by Bradley Wright Phillips and Sasha Kleshin. Kleshin, is that a Sam's name, right? Because it came off his shoulder. But even before, like, because they released then after the fact, after the interview, it's like the in-studio chatter between the three guys at the desk. And Wright Phillips, even before Gavrin rises up and gets the like the head and then the shoulder to it and like gets the touch, doesn't matter, right? He scores the goal. He's like, look at his movement. Look at him go. He's recycling his run. Like, what is he on about? And they're like, oh my God, and he scores. So it's actually great. Like, it's really tremendous content, but they were quite impressed with the way he showed up, but he wasn't just in the box as a presence. Like, he was in there and he was trying to make something happen and he was dragging defenders out, recycling runs, and then he gets the last touch on it. It's brilliant.
Well, he said he used to be a striker, right? Mm-hmm. Must have been many years ago, but he used to be a striker. Yeah. It was great. Do you practice much in training sessions with your goalkeeper coming up just in case you needed that?
Never.
Really?
No, the goalkeepers were sometimes like when you get like deep in the tournament. When I was at Nebraska, we made it to the final eight my last year. And so like you get to that point or we're like with the national team, you're in a tournament situation, whether it's the World Cup, Olympics or otherwise, where it's just something that might be coming up. You practice it. It's part of it. We talk about this all the time. And your keepers are usually the ones that can strike the ball quite purely, right? With some power, with some menace, like there's some venom on it oftentimes. So if they feel like they're up for it, then they're more often than not, they're taking their reps as well at the penalty spot, in addition to saving them and just practicing that kind of rhythm where you would make a save or be in net dealing with a shot, trying to read the shooter. And then you're on the other side of the, you know, like the perspective completely changes, then you're taking the shot. But never in any scenario working on set pieces did we ever have like Karina coming up or like a Steph Labbe or an Aaron McLeod coming up and like practicing like second post runs or somebody setting a pick to release them, you know, to be open just at the top of the six. Like, just never happens. But you do have keepers, personality. We talked about Diana with the presence. Like, keepers often do have that energy about them. They have to, because they have to command their box. So it only makes sense that if you drop them in and they're going the other way, they're trying to score to get you that winner or that equalizer, that they would have the confidence to be able to do it if they have the wherewithal, as you're saying, Gavrin, having the history as the number nine, like that confidence, the comfort to be able to step in and just do it. But I love that. You talked about moments, like they 100% need that and the game needs that.
Yeah, it does. It's so good for the game, right?
Yeah.
And I tell you what, it was a proper celebration too.
Yes.
The old knee slide. It's like he's done it 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. That was a veteran goal scorer celebration.
I know.
Which I give a lot of respect to Gavrin for.
Yeah, but like that's going to go down in history. Like that's, you're going to look back at like famous goals and historic goals for the club. That's going to be right up there.
And who knows if they, you know, the season turns a little bit. There's another come from behind point down to nothing. This team, I tell you, it's shown resilience. It concedes a lot of late goals and a lot of goals in general. But they're staying with it, right? They're never out of games. And they've shown they can come back. So if they can just get that defense sorted, which you can coach, that can come throughout a season. You can improve. They were actually much better last year defensively.
Yes.
But they are scoring a lot of goals this year. Josh Sargent's goal, I thought, I really enjoyed that goal as well, by the way. Quick burst. Mm-hmm. Not known for his pace, but it was just a goal scorer's goal, they said in the broadcast. Lovely strike.
Yeah, he's powerful. Jimmy's talked about his physicality and his ability to create space for himself. But there's something about, you know, without being overly pacey or quick and agile, you have a guy on the ball who can just have that little burst of speed to find the seam and to execute quickly. So sometimes it's less about how quick you move without the ball, and it's how quickly you're able to skillfully maneuver your way through the box. And that's what he did. He receives the ball at the top of the 18, a couple of touches, and he's in behind and just hammers the ball. So he's going to score a lot of goals this year.
He is going to score a lot of goals. You can just see it, can't you?
Yeah.
He's a quality player. So it was a point, but I'm sure one of those points that probably felt like a win for TFC, just given what happened, the comeback and then the goalkeeper scoring. So good for them. Vancouver still flying right now, on course for breaking records for goal scoring. The same week, though, that Axel Schuster, as you know, said he's still very unhappy and concerned about the future of the club. Is that posturing? Is that leverage? I hope so. But I want to hear from Vancouver fans, and we'll get Asa back on the show next week. Mm-hmm. Are they enjoying this? I'm sure they are, but there has to be that little nagging doubt, that dark passenger on their shoulder saying, yeah, but. There's bigger things, there's existential issues at play here beyond this season. I hope they're getting to enjoy this season because it's been incredible so far. They're smashing everyone. But there's got to be that lingering doubt about the future. It's got to be sorted out soon, right?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, last year, the success that they had in getting to the CCC finals, winning, you know, their fourth Voyageurs Cup in a row, getting to the MLS Cup final, record-breaking year in itself. It was almost in spite of all of the uncertainty at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. But that, again, like if we loop back to the World Cup and the political landscape and the high ticket pricing, that football kicks on and then you forget about it. I don't know if we will necessarily, but I think the Vancouver Whitecaps fans did to a certain degree, and certainly the larger fans, the more casual fans who took notice of the Whitecaps because of individual performances, whether it was the arrival of Mueller or the performance of a Bearhalter and a Kubas and Blackman as a defender of the year, Takaoka and Net, like people were sitting up and taking notice of Vancouver. It was performance over kind of the untenable perhaps situation and maybe a community on edge because they were worried about losing their team. I think that became secondary. Whereas now I think it's neck and neck. It's performing very well, record-breaking, scoring tons of goals. But I think what's also looming is this long break that they're going to go on being away from home because they are hosting the World Cup. So it's, I know Asa is always on about, you know, pack the place. I say always on like it's a negative, but he's always rooting for the fans to show up and to show out for their team. So I think the lower bowl is looking like it's going to be sold out. But there's, I think, a lot that's going to come to the fore, not because of the World Cup, but because this team is going to be forced to be on the road. So I think it makes the issues that are really pressing, and perhaps Schuster talking about it in the media is a way to kind of flag it before it gets out of their control. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's going to be something that is going to have to be addressed, I think, by that ownership group that is looking to shift it, right? To sell the club and to hopefully find a new home for them.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart guy. He's not just emotional and ranting and venting for the sake of it. I'm sure he's doing it for a reason. And let's hope that's a positive reason, that he's going to get some movement behind the scenes there. Because, yeah, it's I said before numerous times how boring it is talking about the business of the sport over the actual matches themselves. But this is such an important thing for Canadian football and what should be a celebration, a year of celebration for us to enjoy a World Cup and for this Whitecaps team to be historic and then for it all to go pear-shaped and for Canada to lose one, dare I say two, MLS teams. Because listen, let's be honest, Montreal is hardly stable. In fact, less stable, some would say.
Yeah.
That would be a tragedy.
And yeah, it really would. And a long kind of successful historic franchise in just the Whitecaps women and the development and the pipeline and the pathway towards elite and like vaulting players onto the national team stage or into a really sustainable, viable pro career. You look at the Vancouver Rise right now, they are a separate entity. But when you look at the brass and you look at the administration and the way that that team is run, they're still quite heavily reliant upon the Vancouver Whitecaps and the deep roots that they have and that support system. It's a shared kind of resource when you look at the people in the back room there or in the front office. So if the Whitecaps go, pardon me?
It's going league-wide now as well. I saw Columbus Crew, fan supporters group are backing Vancouver because the Save the Crew campaign did just that. Columbus was leaving a few years ago now, and the fans activated, and they stayed, and they won a championship, and they are very much supporting the Save the Caps campaign as well.
And Columbus, it should be noted, Sharms, have just put in, or they were awarded a bid for NWSL. So that ownership group of the Crew and that fabulous stadium will be welcoming another NWSL team, and the franchise fees are just exploding, right? Mm-hmm. So that the value in women's sports and in the game is increasing exponentially. And you're going to see that in Canada too, with hopefully a seventh NSL franchise coming up in 2027. So you need to make sure that there's stability in each of the markets that are already established.
I mean, listen, if Vancouver were to leave, I mean, can you think of another example of such an established football base in a club having to leave? I don't think I can. I know Wimbledon was a big club back in the 80s, well, 70s, 80s in England, won the FA Cup, famous, the Crazy Gang. That fell apart. They moved to Milton Keynes, MK Dons. That was probably the closest example, but within Canada, I mean, listen, that is the hotbed of Canadian soccer is Vancouver. Simple as that. They've been around longest, had the most success overall. And like you said, both men and women. So get your shit sorted out, please. BC, City of Vancouver, sort it, because you have to keep that team there.
Yeah.
You mentioned NSL. Hey, can you give us a hint who the next team might be? Do you know? You do know, right?
No, I actually don't. But the expansion is or like the search that they've hired a firm to conduct is focused on Central Canada, Central and West, because you already have you only have Calgary and Vancouver in the West. So I mean, I think to facilitate travel, like ideally you get to eight teams. Originally, they had planned to have like a West conference and an East conference, and you know, right now you're kind of heavily slanted towards Canada East. So Desiree Scott retired. She's working now as a technical director in Winnipeg for a local club there. Rob Gale has talked about, like previous Valor coach, and then coached the Vancouver, the Portland Thorns. Involved in women's soccer, like they have been working together with some people on the ground there to hopefully drum up support and petitions and to get a team in there, because in terms of the development of young women in this country, the prairies are often forgotten about.
Absolutely.
Central Canada is an afterthought, and it should not be. You know, we need to cast our net wide, and it just doesn't include the hubs. It always is just the emphasis is the hubs, is Vancouver, is Toronto, is Montreal. You know, there are way beyond that are talented players in Canada.
I thought there'd be a team in Saskatchewan by now. Mm-hmm. Men's. I mean, that's been rumored for some time. CPL, as far as there's a hotbed of, it's probably very small, but a very vociferous, loud supporter group out there who are demanding professional football. So it's time that something arrived there. I'd say Rob Gale and Desiree Scott, I mean, that's a formidable twosome to lead this charge. Rob Gale is a natural to lead that. And Desiree, I mean, I guess learning the off the pitch. I wonder how hard it is, because she obviously last year got the 1 year in with the NSL, but what a career. I wonder how hard it is we discussed this before. We should get on the show at some point. Maybe that's beyond broadcast, because we can have women on Footy Prime as well. Not just on broadcast.
Is that allowed? Are you sure?
We'll talk to Wonga about it, but I think we're allowed.
But well, it should be said, like, that's oftentimes women, people that I know that I want to bring on, I think about the broadcast first, and maybe they prefer the broadcast, Sharms.
Probably.
I'm just kidding. Well, no, they like Footy Prime as a general rule. So I'll reach out to Desi and see if we can get her on Footy Prime proper.
Okay, good. Because there's some career to talk about. But you had a deep dive in the NSL on the broadcast this week. So if you missed it, make sure. I haven't heard it yet, Dubs. I haven't had a chance, but I will. I'm going for my daily dog walk shortly, and that'll be in my ears. But Can you handicap the favorites? Who's going to win it this year? Is it going to be a defense of their crown for Van?
I think they're going to struggle to do that. I think that they're going to be very strong again. I don't think you can count them out, but I think Ottawa might surprise this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's not really a heavy-handed way to loop Desi back in, but they lose Desi Scott in the middle of the pitch. So that's the leadership, but also the performance, the experience, and Ellen Gibson. So like their double pivot that essentially was, you know, the reinforcements down the spine that made them so stable, so formidable, to steal your word there. It was actually a core four, we referred to it as. So because they mitigated central penetration so well, they kept teams peripheral and kind of away from the dangerous areas, like around the D and kind of that attacking pocket with Jaleesa Harris, Liv Scott, friend of the show. Oh, Scott, we call her the other Scott. She's a captain this year, replacing Desi along with Susanna Holland, Harris herself, and Emily Amano. And they have four midfielders that they acquired. So they will very much assume the same identity as last year under Katrina Peterson. They've got DB Pridham, who for me was the star of year one. Of course, he had Emma Regan for AFC Toronto, who played every single minute for them. One midfielder of the year, was on the team of the year. She leaves for the Denver Summit. And I think that's good for her. And it's also good for Canada because they need her to be tested and to kind of really fill in for that number six position internationally. She needs to level up there if she wants to compete against top tier opponents. But DB Pridham has scored 20 goals. Her kit number is 22. My prediction is that she'll get her kit number at least this year. So I think she's going to outperform 20. But what they need to do if Ottawa's going to win this thing is they need more offensive contributions from others. So it's going to be DB Pridham, and then who else? Who's going to come to the fore to show up to maybe bag some goals? You have Mel Forbes, who had five assists last year, but last year DB scored 20. And then the next person, like the second leading scorer, was Mina Lee. And I think, who is the other one? I'm blanking on who else had three goals. I think it was maybe Julia Benatti, who now is with Halifax Tides, on three goals. So that's a tremendous drop off, right? But AFC Toronto, you can't sleep on them ever. Like, they looked like they were going to be crowned champions after winning the Supporters Shield. And they'll have something to say about that this year. And like, they were the most consistent, most dominant team in 2025.
Okay, cool. Sorry, I wasn't ignoring you there, Dubs.
You were. You weren't listening at all.
Well, no, I was listening, but I'm frantically searching for our footy picks sound. JC is usually one to roll it in. But I'm going over our options here. All this new stuff here, actually.
Oh, really?
What stuff is.
It's usually in... Oh, no. Why did you play that after my NSL bit?
Wait. See, my heartbeat's up for the NSL. We've got a...
Very nice.
Especially. We got a studio audience now.
Oh, wait. Charms.
What?
Are you ready? What's up? DJ Mello D.
Where do you find it? I couldn't see it.
Oh, wait. There we go. I found it. It was just beneath, you were playing. Do you see the Club World Cup song? It's just like a couple above that.
I don't see it, but now we know where it is.
Okay, we got it in. Yeah.
It's amazing. Cool.
You can also do the plugged post, or like the sponsor bit.
Yeah. Listen, well, we will, because this is brought to you by BetMGM. Our footy picks, no Craig this week, even though he's 2-0 to start the campaign. So I have put together a little parlay. And actually, it's one of those obvious parlays, but it pays pretty well. So it's staying between the Prem, the FA Cup, and the Bundesliga. Mm. These are... They seem like gimmies. So I actually have Arsenal here to beat Newcastle.
Okay.
Arsenal, that race right now for the Prem, it's down to goals scored. So City beat Burnley midweek 1-0. So they're now in first place. But this could go down to how many goals can you score over the next four or five games. That's incredible. And I think Arsenal, who actually looked pretty good last week against Man City, will beat Newcastle. Is that Arsenal? So I have an Arsenal win, combined with a Man City FA Cup semi-final win against Southampton and Carl Larin. I've been wrong there. I want to see Carl do well, obviously, and he is doing well.
Yes.
Again, big favorites there. They're at minus 450, big favorites. And then you add in a Bayern Munich win at Mainz, simply because I'm doing the broadcast with Jordan tomorrow on One Soccer. And listen, Bayern, they're chasing all these crazy records right now. They're almost unbeatable, almost. Haven't quite done their Leverkusen feat. But so if you have those wins, which all seem pretty like gimmies, right? As far as gimmies are, they seem like gimmies. That pays pretty well. Plays plus 2/201. So $5 can win you $15. So it's not like a big, huge, crazy winner. But I like those odds for games that I think you can pretty much count on. And you can find those odds on BetMGM.
I think that's a tremendous parlay. I also just wanted to mention quickly, so you said you're on the Bayern game tomorrow. That's the men. Women, Bayern Munich, Vanessa Gill will be at 12:15 p.m. tomorrow. I don't think One Soccer is showing the semifinal, but I think they're going to be showing the final. Okay. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe they're showing both. But Vanessa Gill and Bayern versus Barcelona in one semifinal for Women's Champions League. And then on the Sunday, Liv Scott and Arsenal versus Ashley Lawrence and Lyon. That is Sunday at 10:30 a.m. So Canadians in Women's Champions League action in semifinals.
Is that also in One Soccer on Sunday?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
Feel free to correct me, listeners. I know for sure they're showing the final, so why wouldn't they be showing the semifinals, right?
Well, James Johnson was talking yesterday about the plans for, you know, Canadian soccer in general, CSME, One Soccer, acquisition of rights to leagues is front and center. They want to really establish themselves, and they're doing that right now. So fingers crossed that continues. But yeah, that's my little parlay. I didn't go to AI this week.
Good.
AI, as I mentioned, let me down last time by actually admitting that AI shouldn't make up the fixtures. That's worse than my Argentina result against Canada.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Who would listen to me? That's brutal. Jesus. But yeah, back to the Prem very quickly, though. Yeah, so goals scored. And you look at the run-ins for both those clubs, Arsenal and Man City. Arsenal have the slightly easier run-in. But they do have the Champions League thrown in there against Atletico Madrid. So they are, I think they're still favorites to win it, I think. Just about.
You think Arsenal are still favorites?
Arsenal is.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's been a wobble. And I think that Man City have smelled blood in the water. And I think if it's down to goals, I think I lean towards City being able to fill the net more than Arsenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the way they're playing.
Yeah.
They're playing freer, even though they only beat Burnley 1-0. Which did relegate Burnley, by the way. But I think they've been okay this year, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or to say that, I think they've got one win, which isn't great. But they're not being blown away in many games, in fairness.
Yeah.
The Wolves and Burnley down, and what did he follow by Spurs? That's the big question right now. Who are they 4 points away from safety, I think, right now?
I can check that for you.
I believe it's 4 points. Like, it's out of their hands, put it that way. But the beauty of the Prem at that end of the table is no team is going to run out the season with wins.
Yeah, West Ham is just above that relegation zone, 2 points above Tottenham with 33. Tottenham's got 31, but no, you were talking about Newcastle, right? Newcastle's on 42 points.
Only 42? Really? I wonder about Eddie Howe.
Is Eddie Howe 14th.
Okay. Eddie Howe's done. I think they're going to move
you
on
think from so?
The summer. I think he's a great coach.
I quite like Eddie Howe. Yeah, me too.
Me too. And I think he's a really good football coach, but it's just that club is just it's a weird one. Let's see. Oh, okay. So, yeah, it is 2 points back off West Ham, but still 2 points are 2 points with, five games left?
Yeah. What do you think about Spurs, Sharms?
Just mismanaged for a long time, spending in the wrong areas. In fairness, tons of injuries this year. Like a crap load of injuries. But no one's improved under the various coaches there. They haven't changed much, despite the managers. So, I mean, it'll be stunning to see them go down. Hilarious. At the
yes. Just the comedy, right? Yeah. Even if it's dark humor for you poor Spurs fans.
I mean, for all us neutrals, to see Spurs go down and Arsenal blow it, that's brilliant. Such content.
I know. Did you see what I sent on the dark web? It was a sad Spurs fan, and he set all the texts that he's heard or that he's received from friends to like house music. Did you listen to it?
I didn't see it, no.
Wait, let me see if I can pull it up here.
Relegation zone. You're in the relegation zone. Do you think you will go down? How are you guys in the relegation zone?
Can you hear it okay?
Yeah. 2026. Relegation zone. What do you think about an away trip to Blackburn next year? Thoughts on the Virtu Trophy. You are going down. Down, down, down.
Enjoy the championship.
That's great.
Oh, it really made me laugh.
Oh, you can't beat that, right? That
just, you it poor, just, this, suffering this Spurs fans.
Is showing just how great that this system of football is. The promotion, relegation, the promotion race in the championship is incredible as well. Coventry, they're up, but there's a battle for that second automatic place. And then below there, they're so tight.
Yeah.
To qualify for the playoffs, including like Canadians, right? Leah Miller, Kyle.
Yeah, Aaron. And in the goals too.
Yeah,
I see goal and assist Alfie for Leah
Jones,
Miller.
Oh, he's out still, and he's not getting good reports from England about Alfie Jones playing at all this season. Jesus.
Nope.
But yeah, the race though is incredible down there. So I mean, it's just such theater, such drama. Imagine the Spurs down the championship next year. I mean, they'll be the massive favorites to pop right back up again. But so is Leicester.
It's like the bizarro world. Kind of situation from Seinfeld or Superman, where you have a team like Spurs, like this juggernaut of a club, so much money, this state-of-the-art new stadium, right? And going down to the championship is the bizarro world scenario of a Luton Town getting promoted to the Prem, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah. Although Luton was more of a mainstay in the top flight in the 80s. They have that right. History, whereas Spurs have never been a mainstay below the Prem.
Yeah.
It'd be the mainstay in the Prem, right?
But I just mean like the stadiums, right?
The
like
stadiums,
one stark contrast. Road,
tiny little shacks, a shed basically.
And the away fans saying like, I can see into your bathroom, like stuff like that, right?
I wonder, do you think Spurs would sell out in the championship? There's no chance, right? No chance. It's a big stadium.
Yeah.
Financially, that could be, I mean, they say it'd be crippling. They have so many other events there.
Mm-hmm.
Have a Fury fight against Anthony Joshua, and then a refight, and then the trifecta, the trilogy fight, and then you can cover it probably there. There you go. That'll cover the relegation. But yeah,
sorry,
overall, very amusing for us neutral fans.
Yeah.
Sorry, Spurs fans. Sorry, Arsenal fans, but that's the truth. You'd be saying the same thing if it's Liverpool or Chelsea. That would be funny, actually.
Yep.
That'd be really funny if they went down. Anyway, they might next year. That's Footy Prime. For another week. A lot of content this week, Dubs. See, we don't need those other losers.
Stop. 52 minutes.
I know.
We blathered on.
I thought, we'll do 25. We'll be fine.
I know. Here we are.
Well, our apologies for those expecting Craig and Jimmy. Don't blame us. We showed up. Okay? Wong is back on Monday as well, as with JC, as with those other two. So have a great weekend, everyone. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary, as John Hamm might say. Till then, cheers for listening. Bye-bye.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeIG and on Twitter at @footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
And don't forget to tune in to NSL. 10 p.m. Eastern Time tonight on TSN, AFC Toronto versus Vancouver Rise, and tomorrow, 12 p.m. CBC, Ottawa Rapid visiting Wanderers Grounds to play the Halifax Tides, who I think might surprise this year.
Dubs on the broadcast. I'm on the broadcast with Jordan, and I'm going to be flirtatious as well tomorrow.
I am not flirtatious. Having chemistry with somebody from the opposite sex does not mean I'm flirtatious. Good Lord! You flirt with them.